This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris, and as we approach the 50th anniversary of the assassination of our 35th president, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, there have been many words spoken about his legacy and, of course, about the theories about how he died that day. Was the Warren Commission correct that it was Lee Harvey Oswald firing the repository? Were other people involved in that? My next guest says that our top officials are responsible not for a conspiracy, but for allowing those conspiracy theories to endure. His name is Philip Sheehan. He spent more than 20 years writing for the New York Times, and he's written a couple of bestsellers, including his new book, which I'm sure is going to be a bestseller. It's called A Cruel and Shocking Act, The Secret History of the Kennedy Assassination. Phil, welcome to America Weekend.
Hey, Paul, thanks for having me.
How have our top officials allowed conspiracy theories to endure?
Well, because they hid so much information from the Warren Commission. You know, it's fairly well documented now. The CIA and the FBI both were tracking Oswald before the assassination. And if they just connected the dots before the assassination, I think it's pretty clear President Kennedy would have survived his trip to Dallas.
And you say in the book that Clarence Kelly, who succeeded J. Edgar Hoover as director of the FBI, did a private search of FBI files about the assassination and determined that it could easily have been stopped if they had just paid attention to what this guy was doing or what they knew about what this guy was doing beforehand.
Yeah, I thought that was really remarkable, is that Clarence Kelly, who was J. Edgar Hoover's successor, when he gets to the FBI in the 1970s, you know, he, like millions of Americans, is perplexed by the Kennedy assassination. So he asked to see the raw files on the investigation. And what he finds is that there was plenty of evidence in the files of the FBI and the CIA before November 22nd to suggest that Oswald was a threat and that he might be a threat in particular to the President of the United States. And if anybody had just read through that material and connected the dots and warned the Secret Service in late November, you know, President Kennedy would have survived.
What was in those files?
Well, many things, including the fact that Oswald had been under pretty aggressive surveillance when he pays this very mysterious visit to Mexico City 7 weeks before the assassination. And in Mexico, he's dealing with Cuban spies and Russian spies and Mexicans who are very sympathetic to Castro's revolution. And some of these people may have had real reason to want to see President Kennedy dead. And there's a remarkable document, June 1964, from J. Edgar Hoover to the Warren Commission, in which Hoover reveals that the FBI has learned that while Oswald was in Dallas, he apparently spoke openly of his intention to kill the president. He marches into a communist embassy, apparently the Cuban embassy, and says, "I'm going to kill Kennedy." And, of course, if the Warren Commission had known that, they would have asked a million questions about who else in Mexico City had heard this and what did they do with that information. But, unfortunately, this document seems to disappear. The Warren Commission investigators who should have seen it don't.
Why did Lee Harvey Oswald want John F. Kennedy dead?
Well, you know, we can never know what was in the mind of this very unstable young man. But, you know, the record seems to suggest that he was a big champion of Fidel Castro and Castro's revolution. He may have felt that Castro's revolution was under threat from the Kennedy administration, which it very clearly was. You know, we now know that President Kennedy was trying to kill Castro and that he may have been taking vengeance for Castro.
You write in the book, and you spent 5 years working on this book and uncovered a lot of things, but you report on the autopsy report that kind of disappeared. And in reading this, Phil, I got to tell you, you know, you talk about how they could have easily canceled out all future conspiracy theories by just showing the world the evidence. But here's a piece of absolute evidence, the autopsy report, that was destroyed.
Right. I mean, I just found this jaw-dropping, but the night after the autopsy, the night after the assassination, the Navy pathologist who was responsible for President Kennedy's autopsy goes home, sets up a card table in his family room, and prepares to write out the final autopsy report. He notices that the original draft from the autopsy room and all of his notes are stained with the president's blood. And he becomes concerned. He says that they'll turn up someday in some, you know, awful assassination museum. So he stands up and he goes to the fireplace and he pushes the original autopsy report and all of his notes into the fireplace and watches it turn to ash. Now, when the Warren Commission investigators found out about that, they thought that even if he had the most innocent reasons in the world for doing that, it would still look like, you know, some sort of cover-up.
Did the commission hold back information from the public because, let's face it, the country was freaked out by the assassination of our president? And did they think, okay, we can't really tell everybody and show everybody every single detail here? It's just too much.
Well, I don't know about that. It's clear that the investigation was really rushed, and in large part it was rushed because Earl Warren, the Chief Justice who's running the investigation, really, he decides early on that Oswald acted alone, there's no conspiracy, there's not much to investigate, and he wants it over just as quickly as possible. And at the White House, President Johnson wants it over as quickly as possible, if only because he wants to stop all the conspiracy theories that link him, President Johnson, to the assassination.
Mm-hmm. And didn't members of the Kennedy family also believe that the Oswald story couldn't possibly be true?
Well, I say Robert Kennedy, who was then the Attorney General, his involvement in this whole story after the assassination I find very disturbing, because he repeatedly says in the public record that he believed the Warren Commission, he believed Lee Harvey Oswald had acted alone, and what we now know is that was never the truth, that from the first minutes after the assassination, Robert Kennedy suspected a conspiracy, and his son said just this year, Robert Kennedy Jr. said just this year, that his father had believed it was either the Cubans or the Mafia or even some rogue element of the CIA that had killed President Kennedy.
Let me go back to the Cubans, because they've come up now twice in our conversation. Did the U.S. government ever send somebody on a clandestine mission to actually meet with Fidel Castro and ask him face-to-face about this?
Yeah, and it's a great story, and it's mostly been kept secret for the last 50 years. But the Warren Commission gets word that Fidel Castro wants to testify before the commission to explain that he had nothing to do with the assassination.
Wow.
And in those days, the American government couldn't be seen dealing officially with Castro in any way, shape, or form, and he was sort of the devil at the time. So the Warren Commission then secretly sends one of its young lawyers on the staff to go meet Castro on Castro's yacht in the waters off Cuba. And apparently this young lawyer sits and listens for 3 hours as Castro explains that he had nothing to do with the assassination.
See, all of these things that you reveal in this book, to me, your book is like the ultimate debunking of these conspiracy theories. And again, it goes back to the people who were at the top, who knew the facts and covered them up or decided this is too dangerous to let the American people know. I mean, that story right there about Castro, why couldn't we know that they met with him? I don't understand.
Well, I say in those days, apparently, you know, Castro was the devil to millions of Americans, and in many ways, I guess he still is to this day. And it just wasn't, you just couldn't have an official American government body dealing with the devil. So they do it, but they do it secretly.
Yeah. Let me ask you about a couple of other characters who show up in the book, including a man who later became president of the United States, Gerald Ford, who I guess at the time, was he a congressman then?
Yeah, congressman from Michigan.
And what was his role in this?
Well, it's a fascinating role, and it's a very different picture of Gerald Ford. But he's a congressman from Michigan. He's on the Warren Commission, and he is very close to the FBI. And very close to J. Edgar Hoover. And very early on in the Warren Commission investigation, he calls in one of Hoover's deputies to his office on Capitol Hill, shuts the door, and offers essentially to be the FBI's snitch on the Warren Commission. He will be the informant for the FBI about what's really happening on the Warren Commission.
Wow. Did they take him up on that?
Well, they did. Now, he, in later years, suggested that he'd never really fed information to the FBI, but, you know, we'll never really know.
Yeah. And I've also got to ask about Jackie Kennedy, who I know testified to the Warren Commission, but you say in the book that a lot of what she told the commission that day was not repeated to the American people, or we were not allowed to learn what that was.
Well, let me stop you there. Actually, you know, it turns out that Mrs. Kennedy, who's you know, so impressive in so many ways in the weeks and months after the assassination, she did begin talking fairly openly to friends and family in the weeks after the assassination about what had actually happened that day, including some of the more gruesome details. You know, apparently it was said she saw it as sort of cathartic to talk about it. And apparently she was willing to talk to the Warren Commission, but Chief Justice Warren, who was very protective of the Kennedy family and very protective of Mrs. Kennedy, put it off and put it off and put it off until finally there was an interview. It lasted just a few minutes. But in fairness to Mrs. Kennedy, that transcript was made public several months after the Warren Commission went out of business, and it's available. You can find it online.
Oh,
I think very few people knew about it.
All right, let's go back to the one central part of this, which is, of course, a five-decade cover-up in many cases of what people were doing at the time to, Maybe they were playing some CYA. Maybe they were protecting America. The motives to me are all very suspicious here. Not that I believe in any of the conspiracy theories, and after reading your book, I understand what was going on more than I ever did before, so congratulations on that. But who do you put at the center of the blame for all of these things that you say were not really revealed?
Well, I mean, I think at the end of the book, I actually identify four men apart from, well, There's Richard Helms, who was the head of the number two man at the CIA, who made the decision to hide lots of information from the Warren Commission. There is J. Edgar Hoover, who clearly decided early on that Oswald was going to be blamed and identified as the lone wolf, whatever the facts might be. There was Earl Warren, who makes some really spectacular blunders in the course of this investigation, and so many shortcuts that were left with conspiracy theories. And perhaps most of all, Robert Kennedy. You know, Robert Kennedy, I think, was really the one man who could have demanded the truth about his brother's murder and didn't. And it's disappointing to learn that.
You've conducted a remarkable investigation here. Your 5 years of work really paid off big time. In a cruel and shocking act, the secret history of the Kennedy assassination. Philip Sheehan, thanks so much for joining me here today.
My pleasure, Paul. Thank you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend.